Because if the resources can't work the plan, there's no point criticizing the people. Let's have another look at the plan.
Welcome to In Case of Emergency, your podcast about insights into crisis management and emergency notifications. Your podcast source related to business continuity, emergency response, public alerting, and much more. We believe that sharing information, learnings, insights, and best practices is so important, which is why we're very happy to present this podcast to you. My name is John Davison, and I will be your host for this podcast series, In Case of Emergency. Well, today I would like to welcome Jerry Allen, who is a specialist in the field of crisis management and very well known throughout the field with over 21 years experience in the RAF, moving on to IATA, and then over 12 years with Kenyan International. He's also the co-founder of Crisis VR, a specialist consultancy and virtual reality software specialist in the field of crisis management. So welcome, Jerry.
Yeah, thank you, John. Thank you for the introduction. I'd forgotten most of that.
It's an absolute pleasure to have you with us today and to share your insights and your learnings. And really to kickstart the session today, Jerry, I'm going to throw in the first question.
Sure.
We're talking about empowering the front line today. Okay. So it's really about those first responders. And when an incident occurs, and the first responders have to work together with the emergency services, what challenges arise and how can those resulting problems be prevented, Jerry?
Yeah, thank you. I think to help the conversation and help this podcast, I think it's probably best if I use just a single industry example. And the one that I'm most familiar with is aviation. But actually, the principles carry across all industries, particularly multinational industries. So it doesn't matter whether we're talking logistics companies or hospitality or any form of transport. But we'll use just aviation for the sake of an example, if you like. And first responders are such an important factor in any emergency response, but often they're somewhat overlooked. And in particular, in terms of this working with other people, it's having the first responders actually aware of what the priorities are of the other agencies. And if we're using our example of airlines, then the airline first responders would typically be station staff or ground handling companies, for example. And they're trained brilliantly in their own job, but they don't necessarily get trained in the crisis management aspects, what happens when there's a problem. And when they're working with airports or working with local authorities, emergency services in particular, they don't necessarily understand what the priorities of those other organizations are, because the priorities will be completely different than their own priorities. Their priorities are built based on their own plans and their own procedures, whereas they're different for the emergency services and also different from the airport. So I think the most important thing is to make the first responders aware of what everybody else is trying to do and what everybody else's priorities are. And that comes with training. We have to develop and give awareness training right at the front line so that people can pick up on what is expected of them and what other people might be doing.
And how do you collaborate, Jerry, in terms of, you know, there's a multitude of stakeholders and, you know, whilst we can get the training together, but, you know, how do you bring all of those players into the same exercise?
Exercises are important. Training is important. But we, and from my experience, and I've seen it a lot, we train in silos. It's a training for the airport. It's a training for the airline or for the emergency services. And we train in silos. The only way to fully appreciate what other people's priorities are and what your roles and responsibilities are, is to train together. You don't have to train together all the time, but just a representative of, let's say, the emergency services going into an airline training immediately extends that training value. Because if somebody says, well, you know, what's going to happen with the emergency services, you have somebody there to answer that question. And also, it cross-fertilizes as well. The emergency services, having somebody there from the airline or from the airport that says, well, let me tell you, that can't happen. What we've just talked about can't happen. And let me tell you the reasons why. I came across an example a few years ago, and it was to do with access to the airport. And access to the airport in this particular country is governed by national law. But it was assumed by the airline coming from another country that they could just have automatic access to the airside apron. It's never going to happen in a million years. But it was only going to be picked up when you have these joint exercises and joint training. It's so important. Just ask for somebody to come along as a liaison into your training. It's not a cost element, but it's so important and so valuable in training.
Understood. And some wise words there. Now, also in regards to the communication, what about the internal communication between the different departments, especially between the strategic crisis management team and perhaps the operational front line? Of course, it's crucial for the successful management of any incident to make sure that communication is thorough and concise, and perhaps not too much overload. Can you recommend any basic strategies, perhaps concepts on how to set up the ideal process for all parties?
Yeah, I think I've got two examples, really, two things that I try to concentrate on. We'll perhaps come to this a little later. We make an awful lot of what goes on at the corporate level, at the corporate crisis management team. But here we're focused on the frontline staff and how to support those frontline staff in those golden hours, those crucial first few hours, when the only people responding are the local responders and not the corporate staff. And I've got two things, and I've seen it a lot. The first thing is, particularly for international businesses, is try to manage the incident in the time zone that the incident actually occurred, because you're dealing here with station staff. So if we're talking, we use my airline example again, if we're talking about, let's talk about a British airline having an accident in the USA, we should manage that accident in the time zone that it occurred, in other words, in the USA time, and not demand that our frontline staff attend briefings and meetings in what might be the middle of the night for them. Let's get the corporate team to reflect on where is this incident actually taking place, and what can we do about it. There was a great example with the Asiana accident a few years ago, which occurred in San Francisco. At the time it occurred, it was the middle of the night back in Korea, at the home base of the carrier. And the effort was really, at corporate level, was perhaps too much focused on what is the local time in Korea, not what is actually happening on the ground local time in the USA. So the first thing I'd say is let's try and always think about the time zone for international businesses. But the second thing is, have we talked to our frontline responders about what it is that they're required to communicate? There's no point getting frustrated as a corporate crisis manager if you're not getting the information from the frontline, if you've never told the frontline what information you want them to provide or how to provide it. And so there is a big communications issue, but it's an issue that can be fixed in training, in preparation, in exercises, and not left until the day of the event. It's too late then.
Understood. And how would you suggest to really prepare the frontline to not only follow best practices and processes, but also to deal with a real unexpected crisis that suddenly occurs?
I think it's about checklists. It's about having realistic expectations of the resources that you have available at frontline, what they can do, and is there any ongoing business that they also have to take care of? In other words, are there any diversions away from the emergency response aspects? So many companies, if let's take a hotel business, if you're dealing with a hotel emergency, for example, well, the hotel may also be quite capable of carrying on its normal business, but it still has the same number of resources. You can't open a box and suddenly out jump 20 people and say, you know, we're the emergency team. Nobody has that flexibility. So we have to concentrate on existing resources and making sure those resources are ready. So do they have checklists for exactly what we want them to do? Do they know where to go? Do they know who their opposite numbers are in the emergency services, for example? Do they know how to communicate? Have you tested the plan? Is there a plan? Because that's sometimes we talk a lot about, have we tested the plan? But we've all spotted this. There is no plan to test. So is there a basic plan that can be tested? And the preparation of the front line is so that you have reasonable expectations about what their capacity and capability is, and then you've got a gap, potentially a gap, and the contingency plan, if you like, the crisis plan for the company is then based on how do we fill the resource gap. Sometimes we just assume that the resources in place will be able to do everything, and they can't.
Mm, understood. And just to go back, you mentioned about unannounced simulations and not having the resources to do that. I mean, so what's your best recommendation, particularly for the frontline staff, the operational staff? You know, it is about being prepared, as you say, having the right documentation, plans, checklists. But, you know, going back to those simulations, how can you best put those plans into practice? But what's your view on announced simulations or pre-planned simulations?
Yeah. Simulations are simulations, exercises, drills, whatever people choose to call them nowadays. They are an extension of training. They are just training. I do think we place too much emphasis on exercising the individual. You're not exercising the individual. You're exercising the process. You're exercising the plan in the process to see if the plan in the process you've put into place actually works. And so we sometimes spend a lot of time looking at, well, how did the team perform? How did the individual perform? It's not about them. It's about, did the plan work? Because if the resources can't work the plan, there's no point criticizing the people. Let's have another look at the plan. The other issue I have, or the one thing I would like to see change gradually, and one thing I try and reinforce in the work that I do, is we need to go right back at the corporate level and look at budgets and how we assign budgets to different levels within the organization. We spend a lot of money training a very few people, typically at the corporate level. Let's rebalance that to focus some of that budget, some of that training and exercise budget at the frontline staff. Many, many more people can benefit from a small proportion of the budget than is currently the case.
Very, very wise words. I mean, absolutely. Huge amounts of investment goes into training crisis managers at the strategic level and how best to perform, and absolutely more, or should it be said, it would be great to see we have more investment down at that frontline level. So just conscious of time now. So we're coming up to the end for a wrap.
Final question I have for you. What have you learned by working in your profession that you may have adapted as your own standard working practice, or perhaps which you even use in your own personal life?
This is a great question. It's a relatively easy answer, is you have to be prepared for the unexpected. This came to me in my military life. You just don't know what's going to happen next, where it's going to happen, when it's going to happen. It's too late to say, I need to now start preparing. It's too late. You need to have your contingency plans in place. They need to be trained. They need to be tested. Your people have to be ready. Personal life, I do exactly the same. I know where all my torches are. All my batteries are in date. Gas stoves, I know, will work when I want them. And I've got empty water bottles that are sterilized in the garage, ready to go. It's just simple things. And it's maximum output, if you like, from very minimum cost and effort.
Being prepared is precisely what it's all about, Jerry. And it's great to hear that you're so personally prepared in your own home environment. And I'd like to thank you very much for sharing your insights and your knowledge with us today, Jerry. It's been an absolute pleasure. And I look forward to catching up with you in person, hopefully at a forthcoming event in the not too distant future.
Super. Lovely. Thanks, John. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Jerry. Been a pleasure.
The podcast, In Case of Emergency, Insights into Extensive Crisis Management, is hosted by F24, Europe's leading software as a service provider for incident and crisis management, as well as business messaging. If you have topics or questions that you'd like to have answered, or if you would like to share your experience as a guest on the podcast, then just let us know. Write us your suggestions for future topics, and please include your contact details by emailing us at marketing@f24.com. Thank you for listening, and goodbye until next time.